My name is Brad Price. I want to welcome you to this Bible study on Revelation chapter 13. We have our regular two teachers with us, Ivy Connor and Lonnie Woodruff. We are, in this study, going to introduce Revelation chapter 13. This is an exciting chapter. I mean, every chapter in the book is great, but we start talking about two beasts in this chapter. We've had some difficulties as we have looked at some of the textual questions as we've gone through Revelation chapter 1 through Revelation chapter 12. But in Revelation chapter 13, we've got some introductory material. We'll have some charts. I've got some, and Ivy has a chart or two that he might want to interject as well. In the preceding chapter, if you go back to Revelation chapter 12, you find that John was focusing on foes of the church. He's talked about enemies of the church in different parts of this book. And you may know, we've said this a time or two, that when you read any Bible book, and that certainly includes Revelation, in the original text, there were not the chapter and verse divisions that we now have. Oftentimes, chapter and verse divisions are very helpful, but they can also be hurtful because you can think that this is the end of the chapter, this is the end of the thought, but really, it continues. And that's really what we find with Revelation, and certainly in Revelation chapter 12 and 13. If you back up to Revelation chapter 12, verses 4 and 5, you find that the devil was interested in destroying the Lord. Not long after Jesus' birth, he, of course, failed. And now here in Revelation chapter 13, we've got information about God's enemies. And certainly for the early Christians, Rome was a great enemy of the church. And you find great persecution. We've already seen persecution in passages like Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10, Revelation 2 and verse 13, Revelation chapter 6, you may remember the seals, Revelation 6, 3 and 4, Revelation 6, 9 and 11, and then in Revelation chapter 8, 7 through 9, then Revelation chapter 11, 7 and 8, and then the chapter which precedes Revelation chapter 13, Revelation chapter 12 and verse 13. It is really important to have a good handle on what's being taught in Revelation chapter 13, because it is, you might say, one of the central chapters in the book. But there is some disagreement when it comes to expositors in Revelation chapter 13. One of the things I think that's helpful as far as a general truth is that civil government, God intended for civil government to be helpful to people. Paul made that point in Revelation chapter 13, verses 1 through 4. Civil government is very powerful. It can do a lot of things. Oftentimes it's clunky, but it does often work. It does often get the job done. Now, the devil is shrewd. The devil is not stupid. The devil understands the power of civil government. If God is able to use the power of civil government to do things for his will and his people, then certainly the devil is also going to be interested in using the power of civil government, especially evil civil government, to oppose God's plan and to oppose God's people. And that's what we're going to be reading about. I'll give you a somewhat modern example of this. Back in 2011, New Orleans, Louisiana, they had adopted an ordinance which said it was a crime for, and this is a quote, it was a crime for anyone to loiter or congregate on Bourbon Street for the purpose of disseminating any social, political, or religious message between the hours of sunset and sunrise. That actually happened in America. And that ordinance, if you go back and you look at what happened during that time, that resulted in the arrest of several preachers. That ordinance was finally challenged in court not long after it was passed. But you do see, I think, from that quick illustration, that fairly recent illustration, that the devil and his helpers, they are interested in using the courts, the judges, any legal tool, civil authority, whatever form that might take, to shut things down. We're going to pull up a chart here in just a second. And the chart's going to pull out some information from Daniel. You might find that Ivy or Lonnie want to jump in here. This is going to be a little different from our other studies because we're not going verse by verse. We're not really going to be looking at any verses specifically in Revelation chapter 13 until our next study. But Daniel was a prophet who wrote about 600 years before John. And as you go back, you find that he uses some interesting imagery. In fact, some of the same imagery that John uses. Daniel talked about a leopard, a bear, a lion. Plus, he also talked about this great beast with 10 horns. And you can find that back in Daniel chapter 7, verses 3 through 7. Then as you continue to read through Daniel, you find that he talked about four kings who would arise out of the earth, Daniel chapter 7 and verse 17. Daniel also had some things to say about a kingdom. One of the kingdom passages would be Daniel chapter 7 and verse 23. Then as we move about 600 years into the future and start looking at what John had to say, we find that John goes back and pulls out some of those same analogies, some of those same images. John also, as we look at Revelation chapter 13, talked about a leopard, a bear, a lion. And then he talks about this terrible beast, actually two terrible beasts in Revelation chapter 13. And he's talking about evil civil government, which was going to persecute and hurt God's people. Let's go ahead and pull up our first slide here as far as a little PowerPoint slide. You can see from Daniel chapter 7, we have the image of a lion, Daniel 7, 4. And then he talks about the image of a bear and the leopard and the beast with horns, a little horn in verse 8. He says that same horn made war with the saints in 7:21. And then the powers that he's talking about, he says the power spoke words against the Most High, Daniel 7:25. And then he gives a time period that lasted for time, times, and a half a time, verse 25. When you turn over to Revelation chapter 13, you find that John goes back and he starts pulling from those same images. He also talks about a lion, Revelation 13:2. And there's something that's like a bear, 13:2. There's something like that's like a leopard, 13:2. And then the beast with 10 horns, like unto a lamb, made war with the saints and overcame them, Revelation chapter 13 and verse 7. Spoke as a dragon, verse 11. Spoke blasphemies against God, continued for 42 months, Revelation chapter 13 and verse 5. Now, when you begin to find all these parallels, just like with other parallels in the book of Revelation, you want to go back and start looking at them and checking them out and see if you can kind of figure out how they go together. We've said several times, we're not going to try to understand every toe in the book of Revelation. We really want the big point, but it's also helpful. And Lonnie has done a really good job with this, Ivy too, as far as trying to pull in and bring together some passages from the Old Testament. Now, you've got that information from Daniel chapter 7, but there's also information back in Daniel chapter 2, which corresponds with that information in Daniel chapter 7. Now, you may be a little more familiar with Daniel chapter 2. A lot of people maybe read that far in the book, and then they say, hey, this is deep stuff. It's enough for me. But you may remember from Daniel chapter 2 that there is this king, king of Babylon, and his name is Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar has this dream. And after he has this dream, he finds this dream to be very, very troubling. Eventually, Daniel is brought into the picture, and Daniel is able to decipher. Daniel is able to tell Nebuchadnezzar what his dream is. Daniel says, King, I know that in your dream, you saw this huge statue in front of you. And I know that this statue was a terrifying statue. And Daniel says, I want you to know that these four images that you, well, these four parts of the image that you see, he said, they represent four powers. And he said, King, I want you to know that the first part of the image that you saw was Babylon. The first part of the image represents you. Let's see if we can move down here on our PowerPoint a little bit. There we go. On the left side, you see a representation, a graphic for Nebuchadnezzar's dream. You've got the head of gold, and that, of course, represented Babylon, pulling from Daniel chapter 2, verses 31 to 45. Then you have the silver breast and the silver arms in this structure. There was going to be a kingdom, and history is easy to document as far as the power that came into being after Babylon. That was the Medes and the Persians. And then as you sort down to this image, you have the brass belly and thighs pointing to the Grecian kingdom. And then, of course, eventually you get down to the lower part of the image, the legs, the iron pointing to Rome. And Rome, of course, was in power when Jesus, the apostles were working when John wrote the book of Revelation. Rome had two types of power. There certainly was religious power. There was civil power. And looking now over to the right side, when you think about Babylon represented by the head of gold, Daniel 2 and verse 38, we know that they were in power from about 626 to 539 BC. And then when we move down the historical timeline a little bit to the time of the Medes and the Persians, Daniel 239, they ruled from 539 to 332 BC. And then after the Babylonians and the Medes and Persians, the Grecians came into power, the Grecian Empire represented by the belly and thighs of brass. Daniel said that they were going to rule over all the world. Daniel 239, they ruled from 332 to 63 BC. And then we come back down to the legs and the iron of Rome and that great power. And Daniel described that great power as strong as iron. And that was true. Rome was a very, very powerful nation. And they, of course, ruled from 63 AD to 476 AD. And then you get down here to the bottom. Daniel's going to talk about a kingdom as well. That kingdom is in Daniel chapter 2 and verse 44. And Daniel said that that kingdom was going to be something that was never destroyed. And it wasn't. As we look at that kingdom, we find that Jesus talks about that kingdom as well in John chapter 18 and verse 36. And the Lord said that that kingdom was going to be a spiritual kingdom. I'm going to stop here for just a little bit and see if Ivy or Lonnie want to jump in here and add some thoughts.
Well, I might just say that I think it's a wonderful way of studying Revelation chapter 13 is going back and looking at the symbols in the Old Testament, especially in the book of Daniel. A lot of people use Daniel and Revelation today to correlate the one or the other. But the thing that we have to understand is that Daniel, the symbols that that were used in Daniel have to be translated over into the symbols that are used in Revelation chapter 13. And so we find the meaning of those symbols in Revelation chapter 13 by going back and looking at Daniel. Not the same thing, but the meanings of those symbols. And this is the way to study Revelation. It is the way to come to a common understanding of Revelation. So I appreciate that very much, Brad.
Okay, thank you. We have said that we have Ivy and Lonnie. We come out to the same place in the end, but we do get there in two different ways. And I'm so glad that Lonnie brought up the points that he did, because that helps lay the foundation for a key difference that you're going to see presented in the study. You're going to see Ivy take the information from Daniel and say, oh, I don't want to put words in his mouth. And if I need to be corrected here, Ivy, please do that. But he's going to say that Daniel was looking forward to Rome, the fourth kingdom. And then when we get over to John, John picks up with that and he says sort of this is that. As you heard from Lonnie, Lonnie is going to take a different approach. He's going to say we have the information over here in Daniel. John pulls from that information, but John's application of that information is going to be different, at least in some respects, compared to how Daniel was using that material. So this is going to be one of the differences, and this is one of the things that we think makes this discussion very, very helpful, because you can see two very different perspectives from two people who have studied the book for many, many years. Ivy, again, I don't want to step on your toes. Anything in there that you want to add or ask?
Just, I think that we could go into the numbers situation, because you could teach Revelation just from the numbers. The defeat of the enemy, the victory of the saints, the period of persecutions, 42 months, the victory that comes in that period, through that period, and all of these things, and the animals and the different things. We did, in starting out, laying the groundwork, is a very good job on that. I think you used, I may not have heard this correctly, but is Revelation 13, 1 through 10, 1 through 4. It's actually Romans 4, 13, 1 through 4, if I got that right.
Yes, it'd be Romans 13, 1 to 4, so I may have missed
it. Is the stage for the civil service, civil servants of God being ordained of God. So I said, well, the Bible shouldn't be political, or we shouldn't be political. It's all political, folks. The whole thing in Revelation, Daniel's political. Isaiah waited in the king's court. Jesus is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and that upsets a lot of people. But yeah, we have a master and a king, and we're above every king, and we have a heavenly kingdom. But this thing of it not political, we don't fight the political thing. We certainly stand for morality and decency. And in our day and time, we're having a real struggle with that. And I think that's one reason, just a quick point, Brad, that the Bible tells us constantly to be strong in the Lord, power of his might, put on the whole armor of God. Folks, we're in a fight. And if we want to run from the fight, don't want to engage in the fight, probably shame on us. You know, soldiers of Christ arise and retreat. No, we go forward. And we need to be strong right now with all the stuff and the garbage and this change and the craziness that's going on right now, to stand up for Jesus now and not to run and hide. The COVID's out there. People are scared to death. We've got a family member that for 2 years have been in the house. They bring the food in. Their daughters are going to, are studying in college, only virtually. They hate to even go out to the doctor. They don't go out and eat. They don't do grocery brought in. It's a prison, you know, and I don't know anywhere in the Bible that God's people ever enjoying to live that way. That's my opinion, okay, from that. But I do know the Bible's political, politics, in my opinion, is what killed Jesus. the tension between the Romans, and the Christians and the heathen and the Jews. They nailed him to the cross, you know, and that sin hangs over the world today.
Thank you very much. You're exactly right. I think it's 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 8, for God gave us not a spirit of fearfulness, but of power, love, and discipline. That's a verse that a lot of people have forgotten, a verse that a lot of preachers need to preach in today's world, because people need to hear that.
Amen.
We do have some people running around like chickens with their head cut off. They are absolutely terrified of so many things. And God says, look, that is not the way it's supposed to be. But the devil is very good as far as using the power of evil civil government. Saw the other day that last year, 2021, the number of abortions worldwide was more than 42 million.
What?
That is a lot of innocent blood. So from abortion to a lot of the modern things that Ivy talked about, we're not going to get into a discussion about some of the modern issues that we have as far as moral issues. That's a completely different discussion, several different discussions, but you have a pretty good idea what those are. Now, I do want to back up a little bit here and make a point. You do find as you go back in Daniel chapter 2, skipping back there for a second, we get into the feet and the toes. There are some people who, as you talk to them or listen to them, they will say, well, that constitutes a fifth and distinct kingdom. Now, if you ever hear that, take a look carefully at the text. In Daniel chapter 2, verses 37 through 40, Daniel describes only four kingdoms. And you saw that from the image that we looked at. And that fourth kingdom was Rome. And we know that that fourth kingdom was Rome. That power was ruling in the first century when Jesus and the apostles worked. When you go back to Daniel chapter 2 and verse 33, if you read Daniel 2:33 carefully, and then you read down as far as Daniel 2:40 through 42, you find that the feet and the toes were associated with that fourth kingdom, that is Rome, versus a fifth kingdom. One fellow, Borden, in his book, The Death of the Beast, in page 86, he said, and I believe this is correct, he said, the toes described by Daniel denote Rome's inability to totally assimilate those it had conquered. The failure to blend cultures would ultimately lead to a lack of loyalty and commitment. Now, again, maybe he's right about that, maybe not. But if you're looking for some information as far as when we move down to the lower section of that image, I think that's as good as illustration of any. And again, Ivy, Lonnie, if you want to jump in here, I know I've kind of taken the lead tonight on this. Feel free to say, hey, Brad, I've got something to say.
I want to talk about the toes real quickly. Herbert W. Armstrong made a fortune on the 10 toes of the image, and the 10 toes represent the European common market.
Yes.
And it was coming. It's going to be fulfilled, and the Lord's going to come down here. The lion's going to lay down with the lamb and all that stuff. Totally misunderstood the prophetic and the fulfillment of that in Christ and the church and all of that. But the problem is that people will do this. And if you look carefully, I can't find 10 toes on that statue, on that image. It doesn't say that. But we take a leap of that and take that and make that the lesson of the fulfillment of that, which is just, folks, in Revelation, you got to be careful. You're not supposed to add to it. It just says toes, you know, let's let it go at that. Maybe it was six toes like the giants did on each foot. You know, we don't know, but that's just a word of warning there and instruction that we got to be careful.
Yeah, people talk about making a mountain out of a molehill. There are some religious teachers who have done that. They've taken a small detail and almost, if they haven't crafted a complete body of doctrine around it, at least some of the key points, and oftentimes they use that. Well, Paul talked about people who use godliness as a form of, wealth building. And he said, that's definitely not right. All right, let's think about Rome a little bit. When we look at the Bible, we know that Rome was in power. John the Baptist had, going back to the kingdom as well, John the Baptist had said that there was going to be a kingdom that was going to come. Jesus preached that same message. I believe Jesus said that in Matthew chapter 4 and verse 17. John the Baptist talked about that in Matthew chapter 3 and verse 1 as well as verse 2. And that kingdom, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, it is a spiritual kingdom. In John 18 and verse 36, the Lord said, my kingdom is not of this world. And that was that unique kingdom that Daniel talked about. He talked about four earthly powers, but he said there's going to come another kingdom, a special kingdom, that kingdom that is never going to be destroyed, Daniel 2 and verse 44. Jesus also talked about that kingdom in Mark chapter 9 and verse 1. He said, there are some people who are standing here. There are some people of my generation. There are some people right now who are not going to die until they see the kingdom of God come. And they're going to know that it has come because it's going to come with power. Now, if you believe that Jesus told the truth, that kingdom came about 2,000 years ago. It came when Rome was in power, just as Daniel described. We know that Paul talked about people being translated into the kingdom, Colossians chapter 1 and verse 13. And even when we started this study, Revelation chapter 1 and verse 6, John talked about a kingdom. Well, why would John talk about a kingdom if the kingdom hadn't come? He knew that John had talked about it. He knew that Jesus had talked about it. He knew that people were being translated or brought into it, Colossians chapter 1 and verse 13. He was in it, and the Christians that he wrote were in that kingdom that cannot be destroyed, Daniel chapter 2 and verse 14. Now, why would Jesus' kingdom be pictured as unique back there in Daniel chapter 2? Well, it's unique for a number of reasons. When you think about Jesus' kingdom, the people who are members of that kingdom, they have to radically change their lives. They need to be born anew. They need to be born again. And Jesus described that process in John chapter 3, verses 3 and 5. He says there has to be the birth of the Spirit. That is, they need the Spirit's word. They've got to be taught. Under that Old Testament kingdom for the Jews, you didn't have to be taught. You were born into it. But God said, I'm going to, Jeremiah 31, I'm going to bring a new covenant about. And in this New Testament system, you, every man, Jesus said, every man's got to be taught, John chapter 6. And when people are taught, when they are born of the Spirit, then they also need to be born of the water. They need to be baptized, immersed in water, as we see in Romans 6, 1 through 4, for the forgiveness of sins, Acts 2, 38. And then they are added to that spiritual kingdom. Well, when you think about the earthly kingdoms, like Babylon and Greece, Medo-Persia, Rome, there were all kinds of citizens that didn't have to change their ways. They had criminals. Think about the criminals that were crucified with Jesus. But if you want to be a member of Christ's spiritual kingdom, you have to conform your life to his word. And when we think about the Lord's spiritual kingdom, it is worldwide. We'll see that later in the book of Revelation. We'll get to there that point eventually. But Matthew 28, verse 19, Jesus tells his apostles, I've got all authority, go out into all the world. When we think about earthly kingdoms, they have borders. There are places where they say, if you go beyond this border, you are in another nation, you're in another kingdom. Christ's kingdom is borderless. It literally goes throughout the world. And it includes people from out the world. You see that Jews, Gentiles, Samaritans, everybody were welcomed. Now, those four kingdoms that we saw back in Daniel chapter 2, remember they were symbolized by the gold and the silver and the bronze and the iron? Think back to that statue that we saw for just a second. But they're also symbolized in Daniel chapter 7. But in Daniel chapter 7, we find that they are treated in a slightly different way. Let's see if we can go ahead and get the graphic up. We're trying to pull up a variety of things here and make everything click. All right, so we've got that up. Let's take a look at it. See if we can get this. There we go. All right, so we've got the head that we talked about. There is the head of gold. And then moving down a little bit, we've got the silver, the breast, the arms, the brass, the belly, and then strong as iron. But when we come over here, leaving Daniel chapter 2, when we come over here to Daniel chapter 7, we've got the same information, but now in Daniel chapter 7, we have the word like. When you read through the Bible, you always want to pay attention to comparative words, like, as. Those are important words. It's not literally a lion, but it's like, as, similar to a lion. Babylon is compared to a lion. Persia, silver, breast, and arms, but Daniel chapter 7, compared to a bear. Then we have Greece, the brass, the belly, and the thighs, compared to a leopard. And then Rome, strong as iron. But when we look at the book of Revelation, it is a strong, terrible, or the strong, terrible, powerful beast over there in Daniel chapter 7. When you start looking at how God put this together, you have to go back and think, wow, this was truly, truly amazing. And some of them might say, well, why would God do that? Why would he say, okay, I'm going to use gold and silver and brass, and then I'm going to talk about the same things in Daniel chapter 7, but I'm going to talk about them from a different perspective? Well, we've seen that in the book of Revelation, but as you think about the power that he's describing, whether you understand that in the strictest sense as Ivy does, or you take a looser sense as Lonnie does, you begin to find that those animals do an excellent job of describing the persecution that God's people face. Look at it from the perspective of the Roman Empire for just a second. You think about Rome and its power to rip and tear. It was like a lion. It was like Babylon. It had the force of a bear when you look at that kind of power. Or again, if you're going to look at it as far as Lonnie's understanding that's going to be presented in the coming weeks, again, a force which has great, great power, just as Medo-Persia did. When you think about, for example, Greece, Macedonia, Alexander, the swiftness and the fierceness of a leopard, again, what a great illustration to show the significant power in persecuting God's people. And then I want to show you another little chart here. When we think about Rome, especially going back to how things went, a lot of people, and I talked about this a little earlier in the day with Ivy, we had just a quick call. He had a chart that he wanted to make sure that we had available tonight. And I said, I want to go ahead and see if we can put this up as well. I thought it might be helpful as far as thinking about ancient Rome. All right, there we go. Rome had a lot of different emperors. And it is true that there was significant persecution under Rome. Certainly other powers, other nations have also harmed God's people in a number of ways. But when you start going down, you start looking at the various emperors. The first one that really pops up as far as big name persecutor is Nero. Notice that you have some other blanks here, not because of these emperors failed to persecute Christians, but they were not nearly the kind of persecutor that Nero was. And then if we can get down a little bit on our slide, let's see if we, there we go. Second slide, continuing down with our emperors on the left, again, Domitian, Trajan, you find that there are some names over here, well-known persecutors of Christians, but there are also some emperors that you may be less familiar with, maybe not familiar with at all, that were not so well-known. And then here's another example. When you start moving down to about 193, going down to about 337, you begin to find, again, here's an example of reduced persecution, but you begin to find, for the most part, that there is another series of people who were really, really interested in persecution. So when you look at ancient Rome, not every emperor was, I guess, completely dedicated to persecution. Now you might be thinking, well, if that's true, then Christians probably had some times where things were really peaceful. No, that necessarily doesn't follow, because even though there may not have been something like national persecution that was being committed by an emperor, you still have the local situation. You see some of that back in Revelation chapter 2 and Revelation chapter 3. Now, when you start looking at Christians being persecuted, whether you're looking at this from the perspective of Rome, as Ivy is going to heavily emphasize, or you look at it in a less direct way, as Lonnie is going to emphasize, you can begin to tie together some of the things that are said in this book, and especially Revelation chapter 13. When John talks about in Revelation chapter 13 and verse 7, this power, if you understand that as Rome, he talks about power over every tribe, every people, every language, every nation. That lines up very well with Daniel chapter 2, Daniel chapter 13. As far as this great power, it looked like they had religious power. It looked like they had civil power. It looked like they had all the cards to do whatever they wanted. And we've seen that a little bit with some governments today in COVID-19. There have been governments which have really put the screws, they have really clamped down on some of their citizens. You can't leave your house, and if you're infected, you have to come over here to our confinement, our containment facilities, and maybe you're going to have to pay for your food, your lodging, and other things. When government decides that they're going to lay down the law, it has the power typically to do that. And it can be very, very unpleasant. And that was the case for many, many Christians. You also begin to find that when John talks about in Revelation chapter 13 and verse 4, there is this beast and there is the false worship. That's often been true for a number of governments. It was certainly true for ancient Rome. We've already seen examples of that as far as some of the cults that people had to join or had to be part of if they wanted the trade guilds, if they wanted to have a job, if they wanted to be able to buy and sell. Now, as you start thinking about some of these things, I'm also, and this is jumping ship, I guess, a little bit, but back in Acts chapter 8 and verse 35, the Bible says is this fellow, the eunuch, was in a chariot and reading from the prophet Isaiah. Philip goes up to him and says, do you understand what you're reading? And the eunuch says, I need somebody to guide me. And Acts 8:35 says, from that scripture, Philip was able to preach the gospel. From that passage, Philip began to tell this man about Jesus. Imagine what it would have been, imagine what it would have been like to have been a Christian in the first century, or maybe even for the first 200 or 300 years. You have that information back there in Daniel, and you've got the book of Revelation, and maybe going in and talking to some Jews, maybe for some Christian Bible classes, or some of the preachers, they were able to say, we're going to do what Philip did in Acts chapter 8, at least in principle. We want to go back and talk about Daniel chapter 2, and we want to go and talk about Daniel chapter 7, and we want to talk about how God's prophet predicted persecution. Again, depending on how you apply that, Rome or a more general sense of persecution, those should have been some amazing lessons. As we get deeper into the study, we're going to find that John talks about in Revelation chapter 13 and verse 1. We'll also see this in Revelation chapter 17 multiple times, 10 heads, 10 horns. Ivy has a chart that I think we have time to introduce if he wants to look at that tonight. And John talks about that. Daniel did not talk about those things, though, until he talks about the fourth kingdom, this terrible, evil, fearful, frightful beast. And Rome certainly qualified. There have also been, as we look at human history, some other nations, some other powers, which have also been in that category. But certainly Rome was something that the first Christians struggled with. It was a great, great and awful power that took the lives of many, many people. I mean, it was just drenched in blood in many respects. All right, I'm going to stop there. Ivy, Lonnie, to you and some things that you'd like to say.
Lonnie, you go ahead. You skipped a turn there, I think, but I'd have a couple of quick points for Brad in a minute. Go ahead, Lonnie.
Okay, well, I don't know that I can add any more to the introduction than what you're doing. I think, again, we just need to understand that this is how we define the symbols in Revelation is going back to the Old Testament. And once we do that, then we can really understand the book. And the point I really want to make, and I may have said this a while ago, but once we do that, we can come to a common understanding of the book. And because we're using the same symbols and taking the definitions from those symbols and applying them to Revelation. So that's, I think that's a great lesson to take from chapter 13.
Okay. Ivy?
Back to the leopard, the bear, and the lion that you spent a little bit of time on those symbols. And I don't know the answer to this, but I'll throw this out here. Maybe you or Lonnie have input into this. Daniel takes that and turns it around. Did you aware of that?
Yes,
he got the lion and then the bear and then the leopard. Why? Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe it's just an odd thing, but he's using the same symbols. Yeah. And that's interesting. So that's exciting. And then this one for you, go back to your chart on the Caesars for just a moment, the emperors. I missed Domitian about 1960. Did I miss that, or was it omitted in the line lineage, or what happened with Domitian, or did I just miss it? You were running pretty fast through there on the Caesar. Did you see it, Lonnie? I don't know.
I didn't. I was just scared.
Okay. Let me go ahead and put it up.
Yeah, we were smoking through that pretty good.
Right there.
Because he was one of the very, very bad guys. And where is he? He should be around 90.
That didn't work out too well.
Yeah. So. Nerva, Trajan, yeah. Who was before Nerva? Have you got that?
I've got a commission up there.
There he is. Yeah. I couldn't find him. There you go.
The chart did not copy quite like I had hoped. So I thought it will work, but.
He had a long reign. We'll get into how nasty he was, you know, later on. But between he and Nero, I think Domitian took the cake, and that's when the severity came. That's when Revelation was written during that time. And I think he represents one of the horns or one of the crowns or not the crown, but one of the things that we'll talk about later. I think, you know.
All right, we've got some exciting and challenging things to come. So we hope that you will continue to join us for what we do in Revelation chapter 13, as well as the rest of the book. God bless you, and God bless your study of his word.
About that.